Welcome back to Refuge Radio. My name is Angie Horn. I'm the SoCal Regional Refuge Partnership Specialist with the National Wildlife Refuge Association. And today we're going to do something a little different. Today we're going to be talking about opting outside. Opting outside for environmental careers, particularly for young women in urban areas. And so I have a very special guest with me here today at the Los Angeles State Historic Park. Would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. So I'm Selena Castillo. I work for the National Park Service. I'm an interpretive ranger here at LA State Historic Park.
Great. Well, thank you for doing this podcast with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Great. So why don't you start with telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into your current line of work? And just for a reference for the listeners, if you haven't been to LA State Historic Park, it's a big state park near Chinatown in Los Angeles, and it used to be a rail yard,
yes.
I believe. And it's been redeveloped over the last 10 years into
it
a
sure
huge environmental asset. So
yeah.
So why don't you talk about your path and what led you here?
Yeah, sure. So my path is, I feel like, a pretty unique story. I mean, I'm pretty happy about it. So I grew up in Fontana, California. That's in San Bernardino County. Single mother, two other sisters, and I just loved animals. I just remember I loved them, and then when my parents were together, my dad was, like, the super, like, encouraging to, like, get us pets. We had goose, we had mice, we had guinea pigs. We had a ton of like, random animals. I remember going to the Chino swap meet a lot. It's a swap meet that's, like, super huge, but they sell all kinds of things, but they have, like, a huge, like, animal section, and I loved it, and that's all I knew when I was younger. I love animals, and I want to be a vet. But then when I went to high school and I took AP Environmental Science, I knew that conservation, sustainability was something that was important to me, something that I wanted to continue and like pursue. And so I went to my high school's career center and they had this book that was like so fat and it just had all the majors in all of the US and all of the universities, all of the universities that offered these degrees. And so I narrowed it down to wildlife management and zoology. I went with wildlife management because I felt that I wanted to protect populations versus I feel like zoology might be more on an individual or more like biological basis. And I went with the second option. So my like degree title is wildlife management and then with the emphasis in conservation biology, vertebrate ecology. And then I also got a certificate, so somewhat of like a minor in geospatial analysis. And it was super cool. Like, I loved everything about it. My professors, which I want to give a shout out to Tim Bean and Dan Barton, gave me a ton of opportunities to work with like surveying wildlife, computer stuff. Another professor gave me work on campus where they had like wildlife game pens. And I got to like feed and like clean the cages of deer and owls, other raptors. We had foxes there. Just different animals. It was super, super fun. And so I did that. And in my head, I was also like presenting at like symposiums, conferences. And so I was super used to that kind of setting. And then I graduated. I was on the dean's list. And I had heard so much about, like, you really need to get hands-on experience. Like, even during my orientation, that was one of the first things. Like, someone could have straight A's, and then you're going to have this other person applying for the same job who might have, like, C's, but more hands-on experience. And so that's something that I always kept in my mind. I need to build my resume. I need to build it. So I did the best that I could, like, used my summers. One summer I even went to, like, was somewhat of, like, a zookeeper in Ecuador. I studied abroad in Australia. Little internships and volunteer work that I did. And so I felt that, you know, I was like, I'm equipped. I'm like on the dean's list. I got good GPA, did my resume and everything. And I never knew that like applying for jobs was going to be so hard. And so when I graduated, these are my numbers. I applied to 20 jobs and these jobs that I applied to varied from a biological technician for the Los Padres National Forest. Also another technician position with Fish and Wildlife in San Diego, and even a PetSmart animal caretaker. At this point, I was just desperate. I was like, give me a job anywhere.
But you knew you wanted to be outside.
Yes, I knew that. And yeah. I knew the experience that I got in, and I just had something in my mind about like, well, I'm probably going to work like just with wildlife doing entry-level survey work. And then out of all those 6 interviews that I had, which were a mix of email interviews, phone interviews, and in-person ones, the only job that I actually got accepted for was as a park interpretive specialist for California State Parks. But I started working here, and I was like, oh, surely they're going to call me for another job. But no, I got a letter in the mail that said I didn't get it. And so I started working here. And at first, I wasn't too happy about it because I remember thinking, or like, let's say my supervisor was walking me around Luis Rincon. He was like, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to weed. We're going to do this and that. And I was like, that have like my interest and experiences elsewhere. But in my head, I was like, I'm going to work here just for a little bit of time. This is only temporary. I'm going to apply elsewhere. And I actually ended up falling in love with it. I completed my season for the 9 months as a PIS, Park Interpretive Specialist. And then when my season was ending, my coworker, Kaya Marina Lee, was a...
Who went on to the Peace Corps, I
believe. Yes, yeah. Yes! And so she was a park ranger. Basically, the position I have now as a park ranger for the National Park Service in the field of interpretation. So she got accepted into the Peace Corps. She's in Mexico right now. And yeah, so she was heading out, and everyone here at this park, which we call LASHP, the acronym, they were like, why don't we just hire you? Like, you know, we don't have to retrain someone. And I was like, yay, I felt like so lucky. And we still did the interview process and everything. Fortunately, I got the position. And now I've been here for about, I think, a year, or maybe like a year and a couple months. Under like the National Park Service, and so it's kind of this like special position where I'm on land from the National Park Service, but I'm based at the state park. I've only ever worked at this state park. Everything I know mostly is the state park, and so it is kind of random how I got here, but I just feel that it was somewhat fate, even as far as like me going to Humboldt, because then later on like being back on, I was like, oh, he's amazing. He's been like where I've been. I mean, I guess backwards, I've been where he's been. And yeah, and so I totally just got here through people who've helped me out, like the guy at the Career Center. Like, mm-hmm. I never even knew so many outdoorsy things. I had never been camping before. My family had never been, like, outdoor recreation. And of course, that has to do with, like, cultural. Like, my parents are first generation. Oh, no, I'm first generation Mexican-American. So they're immigrants from Mexico. Yeah, camping was never a thing for them. I never knew birding was even like a verb until I was in school. Had never been camping before until we did a wildlife techniques class where we went out and like set little like traps here and there. Like, oh my god, my first camping thing. And so I never knew. And then when we interviewed, or when I got interviewed for this position, they were asking me like, why is it important for you to like, why is this work kind of important for you, for these communities? And I'm like, well, I was one of those people. Like, I grew up super poor. Like, I didn't know about all these things. And I feel like, yeah, the youth, they need someone to, like, help them find inspiration. And these are definitely all of the, like, scientists, conservationists of the future. And so now I'm, like, extremely happy that I'm here. It's almost... I don't know if like
paying it forward.
Yeah, it's paying it forward, of course. Yeah. But also, I almost feel like trapped at this park. It's like so good. The work is so good that I don't know if I'll ever leave. I really don't. It might be like my first and last job ever.
Well, hopefully. Well, it is a really nice park. Let's put it that way. It's really a very nice park. So we'll talk about mentorship a little bit later, because I do want to talk to you about that, because I know how important that is. So you were in Humboldt, so you were exposed to a lot of very rural areas.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you went to state parks, national forests, wildlife refuges, things like that while you were up there.
Yeah.
And now you're in this super urban park.
Mm-hmm.
What's your experience been in the urban area, and how does that make it different from the more remote areas that you've worked in? Are there challenges that are unique to this place that you never would have expected?
That's a good question. So there is a huge contrast. Like,
but what's the biggest?
The biggest contrast, I feel like, is the diversity of populations that I'm exposed to working here in basically downtown LA. And this can be from politicians. I don't know if you heard, but Donald Trump was in town just 2 days ago. He left from this park. So his helicopter, the Ospreys and everything, was here.
At the park.
Yeah.
Wow.
Park. So there's politicians that come by, there's celebrities, I believe Kevin Hart has a commercial here at this park. There's people who don't have homes, you know, we see that every day. They sleep here. Sometimes if we have food, you know, we offer them food. There's a ton of artists. Like, I feel like I can't even believe how artistic LA is, because I had never been exposed to LA prior to working here, and so I feel like, oh, there's so many artists here, it's so exciting. And also just the cultures, the languages. I had never really spent time in Chinatown, and we are in Chinatown, like, prior to working here. There's all these, like, smaller communities, Little Italy and things like that. And so I feel like that's the most amazing thing, because we get to work with all these people, and it could be through providing programming for them. Our programs are open and free to everyone, so we never know who we're going to get. Our flyers are in English, Spanish, and a Chinese dialect. I'm not sure which one in particular. But yeah, so we could get all kinds of people. We can partner up with all kinds of people as well, and we have nonprofits that we work with. We have different agencies, whether it's like the city or yeah, the National Park Service, the Forest Service. And so I feel like that's the most amazing thing, because just the networking is really, really great. All the people that I've met, really awesome. Also, like, my Humboldt friends are getting jobs in these same agencies. So I'm like, wow, like, we're all working together. And I feel that the culture of the parks people, are just people who are advocates for the outdoors, who work in green spaces, is really, really great. Yeah, that's like the best thing.
You never know who you're going to reach and where they're going to go. Yes. So whether it's 2 people or 20,
yes,
you could be having a huge impact. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's fantastic. You kind of touched on this a little bit, mm-hmm. but how has your attitude towards conservation and public lands and environmental issues evolved since you were like a little kid with that mm-hmm. sort of spark of interest in animals and, you know, through all your experiences, how does that change? Like, what are the big ways it has changed?
Well, I know now we always tell park visitors, like, for example, they'll say, oh, like, your park is so beautiful. They'll tell us, and we're like, it's your park. And we'll just return, be super excited. It's yours. Like, use it. Come here anytime. Like, everything here is for you. And now I'm so used to saying that, but I definitely did not grow up thinking that. I didn't even know about all these different agencies and how it works even politically. Like, that these spaces are for the people. Never, like, grew up even knowing that. I feel like I just knew, like, my house. I was in a city. Like, Fontana is kind of small. And yeah.
Like, it's at the base of the mountains, too,
yes.
Right?
You know? Yeah. And so it's like, I'd go to Big Bear, be like, woo, snow, and then just come back down. But I never knew, like, this is mine. I can be here. I wasn't introduced to any of that. And so it's definitely evolved from not even knowing about it, being completely ignorant about it, to now being a huge advocate, encouraging everyone. We like try our best to get people out there. We have done even like urban campouts. We provide all of the tents, sleeping bags, sleeping pads, all this stuff to just get people outdoors. And so my perception has totally changed. And as for the conservation issues, I think I definitely grew up pretty ignorant of what the world actually is, which I think it's like, you know, kind of cruel, kind of cold, also has its super happy sides. But then it's like, growing up, I never knew, for example, like, trash was such a big issue. Like, I totally remember being a little kid, like, spitting out my gum because I would swallow it otherwise. When my mom was like, don't swallow it, I just spit it. And then now I'm like, why do people spit their gum on the concrete? It's like the worst thing. Like, our maintenance staff has to clean that up. And so, and then on larger issues, just school totally, you know, just gives you like a bunch of knowledge, and it's so inspiring to continue conservation work, but also just really concerning, like, wow, we've done what for how long, and it's how toxic, and we're still what? And so I feel like ignorance is bliss, and I've been exposed to a great education that, you know, I learned about all these issues, and now I can do my part with, like, you know, some of the issues. So I'm like a minimalist. I try to recycle as much as I can, things like that.
I know that since I started doing this work, I notice every piece of trash now. Yeah. Before, I didn't even think about it, but now Well, if I'm out hiking, I'm like, yeah. It's like my mind just goes directly toward whatever piece of detritus is out there. And I'm like,
yes.
So, yeah, I understand that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big deal. What has been the most surprising thing about your experience working in parks? It doesn't have to be this one, but just what's the most surprising thing about your...
Surprising thing. I feel like, well, I guess maybe it is particular to this park. Or no, I guess general parks is the risks that come with working in an open green space where it is open to the public. Mm-hmm. And so I have definitely been in situations that are scary because people are on drugs and they're acting like...
Erratically.
Yeah, erratically. And just, you know, I've seen like all kinds of weapons out here, like knives, like people wanting to fight, like chains being slashed around everywhere, people cussing at us. And I don't like necessarily blame them. I feel like this is an issue of like mental health. You know, I'm someone who, because I work with the public, I try not to take things personally. So if they're upset, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to be upset back.
Wow. So these are things you never would have considered in this line of work that you'd have to deal with.
Yeah. And even like in the job description, it's like, okay, I'm making programs and tours and school field trips. And then it's like, boom, suicide. Like, okay, might not be in my category or might not happen in my office, but it's still something that I'm exposed to that I know about.
Yeah, I think that is, it's particular to urban areas. Obviously, mm-hmm. these things happen in remote areas too. I mean, it's not unusual to have, you know, but they have rangers, you know, people.
Yeah, we have our peace officers here and they are the ones that deal with all of that.
But the sheer volume of visitation means that you guys are on
the
front
lines.
It's a
huge variety. Mm-hmm. I've had people just walk into my office, be here when I'm not even in here. How did you like get here? People who have been in the park when the park has been locked and they're just all of a sudden just here. People who have like been locked in the restrooms. We've had flashers in there and I'm like, oh, I want to use the restrooms. Oh, okay. And so, yeah, like random things like that. A little bit of witchcraft. So we have found like decapitated cat heads or decapitated cats here. I feel like that would be the most random.
I can tell you that is actually a... For urban parks in general, that's a very common thing that I've read about and heard about, which is something a lot of people don't know. But yeah, the random animal parts are really, really something else.
It
so if you ever, Prospect Park in New York City has had an investigation about Santeria practitioners in the area. It was interesting. So yeah, you get in this line of work, you never know. It's something different every day.
Yeah, you never know. And then we also can never please everyone. So that's another thing that I've never thought that a park could make someone angry of what we're doing could upset someone. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, we have huge concerts here sometimes. I think maybe like 6 to 8 a year that are ticketed. They're large. They're thousands of people, maybe like 15,000-20,000 folks. And people get really upset about it. They're like, this is my park. Why is it closed off? Because it'll be like the main field that will have like fences around it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, and then on top of that, it's ticketed. Like we can't even go. And so then we do have like a ton of free events, huge, like large scale ones, as well as smaller ones that we, that like I'm personally in charge of as well. But I never would have thought that it would make people angry. I've had people come at me and say like, you turn the sprinklers on at me like on purpose, and I'm like, what? And so I feel like in the park it's like, you know, it's a happy space, but definitely the conflict, and there's all kinds with word choice on our flyers or images, any little random thing like why can our dogs not be off leash? That's like a really common one.
Yeah, that's very
it's
common.
Like for everyone's safety, the dog's safety. Not everyone loves dogs. People are scared of dogs. We've had dog fights here. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a daily thing.
I mean, you're part of the city's fabric. So, mm-hmm. you know, you have 10 million people in LA proper and, mm-hmm. you know, so, more than that in the county. Yeah.
So I just always have to be ready.
Yeah.
For anything.
And again, for listeners, and I'm gonna put a link in the show notes to so people can see a map of the park.
Oh,
but you'll see that it's on one side you have a metro line running, and then you know, it's in this sort of industrial area, and it's really close to like public transit. So there's all kinds of ways for people to get here, which is wonderful because you want a lot of people to visit the park. But you have all these challenges. So. Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that either. I was to say that was surprising for me when I started working in urban issues. So we're going to change tracks a little here to talk about your career and sort of how your experience might be able to help other people or maybe inform some higher ups and how they might be able to be better mentors. So with that in mind, I'm going to ask, what do you look for in a mentor, and what can more experienced people do to better help you in your career path, you and other people?
That is like a really good question. I feel that I haven't really chosen my mentors. It's a gradual thing. And like a mentor could be, I feel like typically a higher up, someone who's older than you, their experience, they share those things, but they could also just be like someone who's younger than you or someone who has experience in other kinds of things. And so I never really considered just even the word mentor, like me having a mentor, until like, I guess about a year ago. So when I started working, I was just like, I want to work really hard. And then it was like my first real job. So I had worked at a game pen, but that was just like solitary work. I was just scooping up poop. And then in this job, it's like, oh, like I'm working with a lot of people and there's like hierarchy and stuff. And so I feel that I didn't really pick my mentors, but I definitely had them. And then it also made me realize that like some of my professors, the ones I had named, also were mentors without, maybe they weren't even trying to like mentor me. And I don't think I was actively looking for a mentor, but I think they still just were mentors. And so
how did they help you the most? By guiding you towards certain career paths, or, you know, what were the most helpful things that they did for you on your trajectory?
Yeah, providing opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah, and just being really encouraging. They were always just like, oh, like I'd tell them, oh, what about this position? I don't know if I should like apply for it. And they're like, just apply, you know, like I'll write like letters of rec for you. And so also considering my supervisor here at LASHP, Luis, he's definitely a mentor as well, and he's just super encouraging. I feel like that has got to just be like the number one like necessity of a mentor, is be encouraging, because we are just often so doubtful. Just everyone, you know, at some point like doubts themselves, like, is this gonna work? I don't know if I'm doing this. And so just being encouraging,
honest feedback.
Yeah, honest feedback as well. Like, because how are you gonna grow like without that? It's like someone who will just help you out, answer your questions, not make you feel dumb.
So a collaborative environment, yes, you think would make things less intimidating for somebody entering into a job like that. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. So, what's a lesson or something you'd share with young people? Like, say someone who's just a younger version of you, say little Selena, you know, from maybe Barstow. You know, if you were talking to a 12-year-old and they came up to you and said, I want to do what you do, I want to wear your uniform. Yeah. What's the one thing that you've had to learn that you wish you had known at that age?
Yeah, I think, and I do get that question a lot.
Okay.
How did you get into this line of work? Like, what do I need to do? And I love it. It's a really great question.
We want to get more young people into careers in conservation. So.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important. And I think one thing to think about, and this is just like me reflecting on like my friends and people that I know who didn't pick the career that they were passionate about and like ended up doing something else. And like, maybe it is earning more money, but how rewarding is it? So I feel that if you are going to do something every day for the majority of your life until you're all nice and ripe, I think that you really should consider something that is fun for you and passionate for you. So I could almost say that I don't feel like I'm coming to work when I do work. And so I think that people should definitely follow their passions. And I'm not saying that it's easy. Like I said, I did try hard with getting a job. But I would say that you need to work hard toward making sure that you are successful in acquiring your goals and your dreams. And so even if the job market is difficult and maybe not the best pay, a ton of entry-level positions are just, you know, you can't really afford a living with it. But even right now, I even still have a second job. I'm a substitute teacher. And so I highly recommend that for everyone. But anyways, I think that it's definitely worth following your passions. And especially the work in conservation is really, really important. And who is going to do it? Like, it just has to be like continuous generations that keep trying to reach out in whatever kind of work. And I think that there's also many possibilities. So let's say someone that likes to work with kids, but conservation as well, but they also like to be in the lab. Like maybe they can do some kind of like nonprofit work, like start their own nonprofit and totally just do research and then present that at schools. And I think that there's possibilities, and a lot of people that I've heard who are passionate about these things but don't go for it. I mean, there is going to have to be like a little bit of sacrifice, but I think once you do it, it's just so rewarding, so much fun, and so much personal growth that it's just totally worth it. And so it totally has to do with just going outside of your comfort zone if you're having the doubts. And then if you're not having doubts, just trying extremely hard to really build your resume. Volunteer is a huge thing. Definitely spend time volunteering. Networking, I cannot even believe how. I think I heard that all throughout college. Oh, go to the office hours, network. And I was
so
like,
you'd
why?
Tell that 12-year-old networking.
Yes. I'm like, as soon as you're super little, like you need to.
Start finding those teachers who are going to write your recommendation letters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Go, like, volunteer. Maybe just start at the animal shelter and then
birders or young hikers.
Yeah.
Like
and that, so now with the internet, so many things are accessible. How to bird. Yeah. You know, online field guides. If you can't afford one, just print a sheet out. I'm sure that there's, you know, local sheets out there for birding. Things like that. I feel that just follow your dreams and your passion and will pull you through.
So what was the aha moment for you with when it came to wildlife management and animals? Like, was there a particular animal that inspired your particular story? I know for me, it was like seeing a NOVA special about the California Condor Recovery Project. So what was that moment for you that it just sparked in your head that you wanted to do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like I can't think of one particular moment. Okay. It would have to be a cumulative.
Just a general interest in
yeah.
wildlife?
Yeah, okay. My mom would take us to like the Natural History Museum here in LA. So cool. Oh, well, actually, I do know that aha moment. It isn't even seeing it in person. It's my mom would take us to the city library, and she'd be like, okay, like pick whatever book, or let's see what we can buy. And I would get 10-cent National Geographic magazines. Oh, I'd always, yeah. Even before I could read, I would just go for it, because they had beautiful pictures. So I definitely, it's been on my to-do list to write them a letter, but
you're the first person whose answer was the library, which is fantastic.
Really?
Yeah,
it was, we would just always go. I don't know if we were like too poor to do anything else, like entertainment-wise, but we would just go. And I just remember they were 10 cents and I could just buy however many because they were so cheap. And I remember making collages out of the photos. And that was my exposure to this outdoor world, you know, like maybe I had been to the zoo, that was like maybe in middle school, all these, it's just totally different seeing them cage versus like in the wild. And then I also remember my dad buying, documentaries of like wildlife, oh my God, they're so cool. Just everything about wildlife. And I still think that they're super cool. I'm like gaining my collection of wildlife tattoos as well. But I just feel that animals are so like adaptive to their environment. So they're just so swift in everything that they do. So totally equipped. I think that they're just like marvels, especially after learning about like evolution and things like that. I just think that they're so amazing, and it's just so unfortunate that we are causing this harm. And of course now there's all these pictures of like a seal with like plastic all like it's caught in a net and all these things, and so it's just even more motivational to try and stop all that. But I just think that they're amazing creations, whether just like through time, I'm not even gonna you know try to debate what created
yeah.
them, but
they're things worth saving.
Yes, yeah, they're totally like unique in their own way, down to like the dung beetle to super charismatic fauna.
Are you attracted to any particular, like, are you more of a, are you a bird person?
I'm
a lizard person. You're a mammal
person?
Yeah, for
sure. Okay. I know, that's totally split. Like, I never knew that people were split between things, but I think mammals for sure. Not to say that they're more sophisticated, but I feel that they are.
So you mentioned that you didn't grow up with an outdoorsy family, aside from Big Bear and stuff, but you had never been camping until you were older. So what's your favorite activity to do in the outdoors now?
Yeah.
And do you make it a point to go to national parks, wildlife refuges, things like that?
Yeah, so that's a super good question because even though I'm a park ranger, I feel like I'm still slowly progressing in that. And so my favorite things to do, I do not like. I just don't have endurance. I get all sweaty and I'm like, why do people do this? I mean, I know why people do it. But what I love, love, love to do is just pick a really pretty spot, preferably where there's like a creek or some kind of lake. I just love like riparian type habitats and just make art. And so I like to paint. I like to doodle like landscapes and stuff, work with watercolors and markers and stuff like that. But, and I love photography as well, just landscape photography. But I also love to ride my bike. I feel that a huge inspiration was the Goonies. I love the Goonies. I think that they're just like my ultimate role models.
That's my childhood. That's really? My generation. Oh my God, I saw that movie in the theater.
I love the Goonies. Yeah. And I remember my neighbors letting us borrow the VHS and me just being like, wow, they're so cool. And so ever since then, I've just been riding my bike. And now that I'm older, I can afford more bikes. And so we have like three at the house, road bikes, mountain bikes, hybrids. And I'm planning a, like, what do they call it? Like a bikepacking trip. So I just love to ride my bike outside. And then I also love to bird. So initially, I really did not like it. I was like, okay, so we're just going to stand out here and just try to see all these little flashes in the sky. I can't even see it. But now I like to bird, and even though I can't identify everything that I see, I just love to see them. I'm like, oh, that's a lifer. And I love to see all the plants. Whenever I'm outside somewhere new, I'll be like, I don't know that plant. So plant taxonomy is super awesome. And insects, I am just totally someone who I'm like, there's a spider on the floor, and just trying to take pictures, post on iNaturalist. And even though I won't remember the name, maybe, like, I just love identification, taxonomy, that kind of thing. And then just art. I love, like, those things. So they aren't super labor-intensive. But that's how I do outdoor recreation.
Do you have a dream location that you like to visit? A particular park or a refuge or any kind of public lands in the U.S. or outside?
Yeah, I think I've really been wanting to go to the Channel Islands for a long time.
Oh, same.
It's like right there. I live in Van Nuys, and so it's like so close, but it's always like planning, and then it's like, oh, it's like how far? You have to pay for what? It's like, okay, like I'm going to do it. And so that's definitely on my to-do list. Yeah, I think just international. I try to do like one international trip every year, just to discover all these other. I just think about the ecosystems. Like, I haven't been here. I want to see the rainforest here. I want to see these animals. So yeah, I just feel like there's so much out there that I have yet. I think I still need to learn how to appreciate the desert.
That's something that, I grew up in the desert, mm-hmm. So that's one of the places it feels like home. But I know it's a tough place to love. I always feel kind of guilty when I bring people out and it's 110 degrees. And I'm like, come on, keep up. it takes a certain type. Yeah. For me, I need to learn how to appreciate the cold a little more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The easiest way to get me to stop moving is put me somewhere where it's like below 40 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't really do it. So I feel that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the desert is very accessible to you.
I know. Yeah. I definitely need to go see a Joshua Tree monster out in like the Death Valley or something. That's.
Is there anything else you want to share about yourself that you'd like the audience to know?
I'm open to.
You want them to come visit you here?
Contact. Yeah, they totally can come visit me. So LA State Historic Park. And I practically live in the Welcome Pavilion, and so any school programming, if you'd like to partner up, I'm also really huge for, like career day. And I feel like just telling my story, like I grew up with a speech impediment. So kids who maybe like also have that, you know, maybe they're too shy to talk or, you know, I feel like they need to see people who look like them and different kinds of work, even if it's not within parks. I feel that the diversity just needs, it is improving like everywhere in like the workforce, but there's still like some work to do. And so I am super happy when people are happy to see a POC in uniform. They're so excited, or even just a woman, like they'll clap. We've had that before. Oh my God, a woman Rangers. And we're like, yeah. And so I feel that I'm totally open to going out to, like, communities and being like, hey, you can do it too. Like, I have one good eye, speech impediment, single parent, first generation Mexican American. Like, you can do it too. Just, like, try. And it's, like, doable. And, like, I can help you if I can. Like, just reach out. Like, I'm totally open to that.
If you became superintendent tomorrow, what's your dream program to implement a park like this?
So my dream programming would be something that evolves. So it would be ideally maybe like three programs that are all part of one. Something that evolves in the sense of like location. So first it could be maybe if we're targeting, let's say like the Boys and Girls Club, have something, take it to them. You're like, oh, like, let's talk about the outdoors and campfire. Okay, now let's go to the park in Chinatown. And let's look at the bugs and plants. Okay, now let's, the final thing, we get a bus. I'd love everything to be free, everything provided. The more, the merrier. And take them out to the mountains for, like, the last one, or, like, a backpacking trip. That would be amazing. But, of course, like, financial and other resources are super limiting. But that's what I would do. And we already do some programming like that evolves. So for example, like the fishing program, you know, people come for a couple workshops, they can go home with their fishing poles, they raffled off fishing permits, things like that, where we provide information so that there aren't those psychological barriers of like, I can't do this because I don't know about it. That would be one. Providing the tools, so if we want them to go camping, it would be so great if we could give them tents and sleeping bags. And then that way they have everything and they're ready and it's just up to them to like plan something. And so, and especially just targeting underserved communities. And I would love to have like every language translator possible because that's the biggest barrier in LA. And so I wish that I could speak all kinds of languages and just tell everyone like, these are your lands and like, let me give you this if I have it and go out there and inspire, you know, the youth or even just people who might be in their 60s, 70s and never been to the beach before. I think that's really great.
It sounds like you have a dream job.
Yes.
What is the dream job? What do you want to do?
Yeah.
You know, if you could go anywhere in the country and have any job you wanted in the conservation field, what would you do?
That's a really good question. I feel that now that my perceptions have shifted and now I have a huge focus on people. I think that my dream job would be to have a huge bus or multiple huge buses and almost be like natural libre where it's like we're gonna take the kids out, like everything is just field trips, let's just only do field trips. And it would just be so cool if I just had like this giant bus and took all these kids, whatever background that they had, people who otherwise wouldn't have had the opportunity, and just take them out to state parks, city parks, national parks, islands, beaches, and introduce them to like scientists and be like, oh, like today we're here with one of my professors, Maron Gabriel, we're gonna talk about the Pacific fishers and how they're being like poisoned, and you know, and just let them see, let them touch stuff, and let them like gain those experiences and be inspired. And actually my coworker who's in the other room had a teacher who out of her own pocket and or grants would take them out on buses to go to these different parks. They even went to, she was just telling me, like, Yellowstone when she was, I don't even know in what grade. But there's people who do that, and I'm like, wow, that is just so inspiring. And if only there were the resources, that would just be so fun.
So you'd have your outdoor education school.
Yep. Yeah, and just networking, and they can do their own projects on conservation, go clean places up, but then also go just do all kinds of work.
What's something you want the audience to know about this park in particular? What makes it special to you?
Yeah, what makes it special is its story of how the community created the park and how they fought for the park, which I feel that they did huge, like really, really great advocacy work to get it. And I never knew that people could summon up so much power to get a state agency to come out here, purchase something, $32 million for 32 acres, and just give it to them. So we have a sign that says the park is made by people, and I just totally am in love with that story. I think that it's really, really, really great, and I think that we also try to focus on the community and still continue to provide for them. And so there were 65 listening sessions before the grand opening of the park at some point, where people just got to provide input what they wanted. And so we are trying to implement all those things, like yoga they wanted, yeah, campfires, different kind of stuff. And so we're working on that, some of those things we already offer. And so I just totally love the story, and I highly recommend them coming out if we ever post a tour on our Facebook page, Instagram. Yeah, definitely come on out. The story is really, really unique, especially compared to other parks, other historic parks. This has a ton of history.
Well, the people certainly created a nice little refuge here for both birds and for animals and people alike. Mm-hmm. It's something that everyone has to see if they're coming to Los Angeles, for sure.
Yeah, and we're just a mile away from Union Station, so we're super close.
Public transit, yeah. Plenty of parking if you have your California State Parks pass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. So where can people find you and the park on social media?
Yeah, so my face is plastered on a lot of the park stuff. You will find us on Instagram. The handle is LA State Historic Park. On Twitter, it is the acronym LASHP. Our website, where we also have like our calendar events and things like that, is lashp.com. It's a WordPress website. We're on Facebook, so if you just search Los Angeles State Historic Park, we'll pop up there. And of course, in person, whenever you're around Chinatown, we'll be here.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, of course. I'm so happy that we did this, and thank you for coming over.
You're very welcome. And to everyone out there, happy National Public Lands Day.
Yay, woohoo!
And we'll be back soon with another episode of Refuge Radio. Thank you very much.